This episode of Gunblog Varietycast brought to you by LawOfSelfDefense.com. Go to LawOfSelfDefense.com/variety to learn about your state's self-defense laws. Sign up for one of their online or in-person seminars or buy the book Law of Self-Defense and get 10% off when you use the discount code VARIETY at checkout. That's LawOfSelfDefense.com/variety. Sit back, relax, and take a ride with us on the Gunblog Varietycast, episode 79. Welcome back to the Gunblog Varietycast. I'm Sean, and I'm joined as always by Adam. How are you doing, Adam?
Three. All three of my kids were up at different points last night. 11, 3, and 4:30. Thanks.
You need to learn to sleep through it.
No, that's not allowed. Because I used to sleep with a fan, and then we had kids, and I'm not allowed to sleep with a fan anymore. They might wake up and we won't hear them, which I think is the point of the fan.
Just keep sleeping.
Yeah.
As long as the house doesn't burn down and you sleep through that, that would be a problem.
I have actually been woken up by a guy with an axe in his hand. He was a fireman in my dorm because I slept through the fire alarm because I had a fan.
Oh, yeah. See, that would be bad.
Yeah.
Well, let's get started with a tactical dog and fitness report. 21 dog walking miles, and this rain is getting irritating, but not as irritating as the home search has been.
Dun, dun, dun.
I told you about the house. I didn't talk about it on the podcast, but I told you about the house.
Yeah, you told me about it.
And I think I told Weird about the house, and I think I've told a bunch of people about this house. I was like, oh, we're going to buy this house. I just love this house. I think we've got it all set up. They're going to put some carpet where they have the wood so that the dog has, because we don't want to have wood where the dog likes to run because of lupus lipophobia, right? I know we talked about lupus lipophobia. They said, yeah, we can put the carpet in for you, and it'll cost you this much money. And our agent got back to him and said, all right, I'm putting together the package. You're going to have an offer in your hot little hands this afternoon. And the builder says, oh, we sold it.
Well, them's the breaks.
Yeah, I know. So there's multiple builders in this little subdivision. I don't know how that works. I thought it would be one big builder would, just build a bunch of houses. But apparently it's a bunch of little builders that are building a couple of houses in the subdivision. And there's another builder. We like their work almost as much as we like them. And they haven't irritated the piss out of us.
Right.
So the agent has gone to this other builder and said, they like that house. Will you build another one for us on one of the other lots? And the guy says, sure. Where would you like it? This is the price. This is the deposit you would have to give us. And that's going to happen on Tuesday. We're going to have our little chat, pick the lot. And I think that's the route we're going to go.
All right. Congratulations. Maybe.
Maybe.
Not yet.
Not yet. When the papers are signed.
Right. Well, I have been almost sick all week. You know how, you wake up in the morning and you're like, am I sick? Am I not? But you don't have a fever and it's mostly just sinus stuff. So I've had that all week. But I was actually able to get on the treadmill for 2 days this week. I'm not sure if those events are related or not, though.
You're not sick, but you're sick of being on the treadmill already?
Maybe. No, it's like, I got on the treadmill, and then the next day, I wasn't feeling so good.
Oh.
So, I don't know if those are related or if it's just weather.
Okay. Now it's time for Blue Collar Prepping with that bratty kid sister of the gun blogosphere, Aaron Paulette. This week, Aaron interviews Scott Bascom about the prepper resources that are available to non-Mormons through the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Come on, every pony! It's time for Blue Collar Prepping with Aaron Paulette!
Hello, Blue Collar Preppers. This is Aaron Paulette, and I am interviewing Mr. Scott Bascom. Scott is a friend of the blog. He has written several articles on prepping for us in the past, but today he's here as a subject matter expert because in addition to being a prepper, Scott is a Mormon. And based upon my very imperfect understanding of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, there is a doctrinal commandment in Mormon theology, or I guess just in the culture, that they need to prep. So, Scott, welcome to the show. Please just give us a capsule history on why prepping and Mormonism are linked.
It goes way back to the early days of the church. We tried to form a couple of settlements. We said, let's all get together and do this Mormon thing together. And for various reasons, those didn't go very well. There was an extermination order that lasted into the 1990s, where it was illegal to kill Mormons in Missouri, and things just did not go well for a while. We then decided to pack up our stuff and leave, and so left for the Salt Lake Valley and Utah in general. And that left a lasting cultural impression, because when you've had to walk across the U.S. with nothing but a bunch of hand carts, sometimes in the winter, you tend to tell your children about it and say, don't do the same things. That led to things like the colonization of places like Las Vegas, which was originally a Mormon colony. If you look at Salt Lake, it's this nice crossroads of the interstate, because we'd start a colony every so often in order to allow people to travel across the U.S. safely. You go into more modern times, and the LDS Church dealt with the Great Depression relatively well and said, we need to expand our preparatory efforts.
Okay, so is it actually a part of your belief system that you must have preps? Because I have heard that all good Mormons have 1 year of supplies for every family member.
It is encouraged by church leadership. It is doctrinally encouraged. It is not something that is required to be a member in good standing of the church. You can still attend church, and you can still go through all the various and sundry activities and so on if you do not have a year's supply. That said, it's basically a very good idea that is strongly encouraged by both culture and by church leadership. They don't always define what a year's supply is, so, you know, if you go shooting a lot, that may include a year's supply of ammunition, but they do say things specifically like, you want a year's supply of food, if at all possible, and of money.
So with that little bit of history, first let me calm people down. We're not trying to convert anyone to the Church of Latter-day Saints. The entire point of this segment is to talk about all the different prepping resources that non-LDS members can take advantage of. And I understand, Scott, that there are quite a few.
There are. There are a lot of options available for non-Mormons, and we are generally very happy to help people access that information.
So, Scott, you mentioned to me that the LDS Church had resources for people in disaster situations, and there was a breakdown for the immediate disaster, the long-term disaster, and then the big one. Can you go into detail on that?
Certainly. Immediate disasters are things like a natural disaster or similar. If there's an earthquake or if there's a hurricane, then generally, the LDS Church has people on the ground fairly quickly, and we do have rapid response teams that get things to people. We also have pamphlets and other documentation that tell people how to assemble aid for themselves and others in case of emergency. We actually encourage something called a 72-hour kit, which is supposed to be 3 days' worth of food, water, and other necessities for a person.
I'm smiling because just about every prepper really should know about a 72-hour kit and have one.
I've seen them called crash bags and crash kits and so on in other places.
All right, but what about something longer term, like if someone loses their job?
In that case, we have longer term planning strategies. The LDS Church has places called canneries, and we've got them across the U.S. I'm not super familiar with what the exact rules concerning them are in countries other than the U.S. My apologies to listeners outside the U.S. But you can go to a cannery, and you can buy food in bulk. It's not awesome, amazing, you know, steak or something, but it's rice and beans and similar things that will keep you alive. And so if you lose your job, you have food that will keep you and your family alive. There are also financial planning resources. There are pamphlets on how to set a budget that make the whole budgeting process much less of a heartburn for somebody who's never done it before. And there are calculators for this is how much of what kind of food you need per person in your household to keep people alive.
All right, so what happens if the poop really does hit the oscillating fan? What then?
Well, We have emergency preparedness coordinators that part of what they'll often do is teach people the basics of things like gardening. Now, they also cover things like community first aid classes, and they teach things like, this is how you cook an edible meal out of your food storage, because let's be honest, if I have dried milk, rice, and beans, it's kind of gross unless you have some spice. We have a lot of cultural push to know basic how-to skills. The LDS Church is the single largest sponsor of Boy Scout troops in the U.S. currently. And so there's a lot of cultural push for that kind of thing. And they do accept non-LDS youth into those troops.
And all of these classes, they are for free, correct?
Yes.
Great.
They may occasionally charge for materials. I've never seen it happen, but they do not charge for instructor time.
Now, I also understand that there are some resources that people with access to the web can get right this very minute.
Yes, there is a LDS Provident Living website, and on that website it has an entire list of, and this is what you need for, all sorts of things. And it has a lot of general guidelines, so you won't necessarily find, this is how you pluck a chicken, but you will find a lot of things like, this is basic gardening information, this is how to do basic budget, this is how you do food storage, general, you know, keep it in a cool, dry place, this is how you find employment, this is how you can get educational resources, things like that.
And are there apps as well?
There are, actually. Now, fair warning to everyone, this is a church-based resource, so if you object to seeing Bible verses scattered in, then this is really not for you. But there is a LDS Gospel Library application, and that should be free on the Amazon App Store or on Google Play. It should have a section labeled Self-Reliance. That section has a lot of different pamphlets in it that have basic information, such as the budgeting pamphlet I mentioned before, which takes a lot of stress and headache out of budgeting for people who haven't done it before.
And I also want to point out that just because it comes bundled with the church literature, it doesn't mean that these different resources are all packed together with the church gospel. They are labeled in different files.
That is correct.
So the idea is, if you're interested, you can read, but people who don't want to find out about the religion, you don't have to worry. It's not going to be inflicted on you.
I want to make it clear that we also don't, like, collect your data and send missionaries to the door if you download the application and aren't Mormon, so. That knocking sound you hear is not us, I promise.
That's good to know. I'm going to close with a book that I have that I think is fantastic. It's called The LDS Prep Manual, and it is a softcover book. You can find it on Amazon for $24.95. This one is the 2012 edition, and there hasn't been a more recent one put out in print, correct?
To my knowledge. That said, any LDS distribution center would have that on hand also.
I highly recommend this book. It is over 500 pages. It is full of good information. It has clear instructions. It has lots of color photographs. And it is a great resource for a very small price. So if you like having things in hard copy, you can get it. And of course, you can follow the link in the show notes and you can get an app version of it as well. Or you can take the belt and suspenders approach and have both. All right. Thank you, Scott, for your time. I appreciate it and hope to interview you again.
Thank you very much. I hope to be on your show again.
If you'd like to read more from Erin, check out her blog, lurkingrhythmically.blogspot.com.
Felons behaving badly. Two men wanted in connection to fatal shooting in Scotland Neck.
They shot Scotland in the neck?
Apparently Scotland Neck is a place in North Carolina.
Oh, okay.
Dateline Scotland Neck. The Scotland Neck Police Department is looking for two suspects in a Tuesday night fatal shooting. The police department says officers were called to the intersection of Grace and 11th Street in reference to a shooting. When officers arrived, they discovered the victims had left and were being treated by EMS near our community hospital. Police say two of the victims were airlifted to Vidant Medical Center, while the other victim was treated and released. Investigators say one of the victims airlifted, victim, was pronounced dead shortly after arriving at Vidant. Victim was 24 years old. Investigators say victim and two other victims were shot while sitting inside a car. Police have identified 20-year-old suspect 1 and 22-year-old suspect 2 as two suspects wanted in connection with the shooting. Suspect number 1, robbery with a dangerous weapon conspiracy, fell in Class D. And suspect 2, robbery with a dangerous weapon attempted, fell in Class D.
Starting young.
Looking at their permanent record, the 22-year-old, he was convicted of a crime in 2010, so 6 years ago. And the 20-year-old was convicted of a 2014 crime.
Well, all right then.
And he's currently listed as an absconder from his parole.
Right.
You thought Bernie Sanders' economic policy was a disaster. This week on Foreign Policy for Grownups, Nikki tells us how his foreign policy is even worse. Nikki, I know you don't normally wade into politics or elections on this podcast, but I just want to say two things to you. Bernie Sanders, foreign policy.
All right, you really want to make my head explode, right? Is that the goal here? Yeah, the terror is Bernie Sanders, who not only has zero understanding of economics and finance, but also apparently foreign policy is beyond him.
So the burn got burned when he showed his lack of financial common sense by trying to compare student loans to mortgages. What's the chance his foreign policy plans are as poorly thought out as his economic ideas?
Gee, what do you think? Yeah, it's actually worse. Not even kidding. My husband pointed me to this article in which Sanders is quoted as saying, quote, "We must work with our NATO partners and expand our coalition to include Russia and members of the Arab League." And I'm imagining him with the hair flying and the spittle coming out. It's just not cool. You know, he wants to expand the North Atlantic Treaty Organization to include the very adversary that organization was created to fight. I guess he hasn't been watching current events, and because he's certainly not real well versed in history. NATO was specifically created to fight the Soviet Union on the heels of the Second World War. And Vladimir Putin right now is working to create a new resurgent Russia, a new world superpower that's hostile and aggressive toward its neighbors. Not only that, but Russia continues to view NATO and the United States as its chief national security threat. And Bernie, well, he just wants to pull Russia right into our alliance because of an enemy that's not even an existential threat to the United States. If you remember when we chatted the last time, I told you that the Director of National Security named Russia and not ISIS as an existential threat to the United States. Because while ISIS has the will to go out and murder Americans, they don't really have the means or the resources to do so on a large scale. Russia does. And considering that they view us as their primary national security threat, is letting them into NATO to fight an adversary that doesn't represent an existential threat to us really a good idea? Sanders apparently just doesn't get it.
So Bernie Sanders is completely inept when it comes to our policy towards Russia. What about his other foreign policy views? Just as crazy?
Crazy or misinformed. Either way, dangerous. For instance, he's screeching for more Syrian refugees to be allowed into America. Now look, emotionalists will point to the very soul of our nation being at stake, our failure to help those whose very existence is in peril. I get it. We're a generous and kind society. We want to help. But when the director of the Defense Intelligence Agency publicly says that ISIS will not only plan additional attacks against Europe, but also will attempt to attack the United States, when the director of National Intelligence says that ISIS would use the refugee program to insert operatives into the United States, and when the worldwide threat assessment estimates that roughly 60 ISIS-linked individuals were already arrested in the United States last year alone, we need to think very carefully about whom we allow into our country and how we do it. Sanders, he doesn't care. I shudder to think whom he's going to appoint to his national security team. And yet, he wants to create a new NATO alliance that includes our adversaries to fight an enemy he doesn't even consider dangerous enough to bother checking when they come into the United States. Crazy? Yeah, I'd say so. And here's what I find incredibly hypocritical of Sanders. On his website, he lists an issue of War and Peace. He writes, "As the former chairman of the Senate Committee on Veterans Affairs, Senator Sanders knows what the cost of war is. He knows that 6,700 brave men and women lost their lives in those wars, that too many came home without legs, arms, or eyesight. He also knows that some 500,000 servicemen and servicewomen returned home with PTSD and traumatic brain injury, and that the war has disrupted the lives of tens of thousands of families. Yeah, okay, that's all well and good and fuzzy and sweet, and yet, as the former chairman of the Senate Committee on Veterans Affairs, his staff knew, they knew, and did nothing with detailed reports of myriad abuses going on for years at the Tomah Veteran Affairs Medical Center, according to one whistleblower. They did nothing, and Sanders did nothing. So forgive me if I'm a bit skeptical about his oh-so-convenient, just-in-time-for-the-election concern about our veterans going to war. There's so much ignorance and complete lack of understanding about our adversaries and our allies in Sanders' foreign policy. Remember when he said in one of the debates that Putin is sorry he invaded Crimea? I almost choked on my drink when I heard that. He has zero clue about the world, zero clue about our standing in it, and his continued insistence that we transfer yet more money to highly indebted or impoverished countries given our high levels of debt makes him completely unqualified for the presidency. Well, honestly, I have no idea how he gets elected to the Senate time after time.
So, Senator Sanders, crazy or completely incompetent?
Yes.
All right, Nikki, it was good to talk with you. I'll see you again next week.
You bet. Take care.
Nikki blogs at thelibertyzone.com.
Plug of the week.
Oh, man. I think I may have mentioned this last week. I don't know. I bought a 3D printer.
Okay.
They're awesome. So, I specifically bought the Monoprice Maker Select 3D printer, which is actually a rebranded Wanhao Duplicator i3. It's a Prusa i3.
So aside from printing dog food, what else does it do?
So that's a little inside joke. I printed a little mini toy car for my son, and this morning the dog ate it, which is okay because the PLA, the polylytic acid, which is the filament that I'm using right now, it's actually cornstarch, so it doesn't really matter. So I bought this thing because it was $350, which is cheap, right? I say 3D printer, people think like $800, $900 for kits, $2,500 for the finished ones. $350. It's awesome. Most of the things that I have printed so far are improvements to the printer itself, which is kind of cool when you think about it, right?
Kind of weird, yeah.
Right? So I've got a link in the show notes to a guy who has a whole bunch of things that you should print for your printer to make it work a little bit better. I firmly believe that like 5 years from now, everybody who has a compressor in their garage right now for air tools is going to have a 3D printer just to print out parts and, you know, whatever for their cars. Or, I mean, I know you don't really care about printing out parts for your cars because, you know, yours is like brand new and you keep it for a year and a half or whatever.
Two. And then the company gives me a new one.
Right. And then they give you a new one. Right.
But my wife, on the other hand, she might totally want a 3D printer. She likes to fix things. My wife's the tool user in the family.
Right. So we've also mentioned, you know, before that I was making these little switch panels for the Jeep Cherokees. And I was having to wait 10, 12, 14 days for prototypes. And now it just takes me a couple of hours to print one. And I've got it and I don't have to pay for it. Well, I have to pay for it, but the 2.5 pounds of filament cost me like $16. And these things weigh like a half an ounce. So it cost me like 25 cents to print these things out. Plus, even with a heated bed, which was the reason why I bought this one and not the $299 model that my friend actually sent me. That's how I found out about this one. Even with the heated bed, it only uses like 200 watts. So I'm not expecting a huge electric bill next month.
So rapid prototyping just became much easier for you.
Oh, man. Boy, did it ever. And now I'm like looking around, I'm like, what can I make? What can I make? What can I make?
And now you can use more filaments than just this PLA stuff?
Yes. You can use almost any 1.75 millimeter filament. And they have filaments that are like wood and ceramic. Most of the common ones are PLA and ABS. ABS is a little trickier to print with, they say. So that's why my first spool was PLA, but I'm probably going to buy some ABS here shortly. They actually also have conductive filament, so copper and bronze, and you can like make pretty stuff. I mentioned wood, and with wood, it's kind of weird. So what they do is they pulp the wood, I guess, and then like put some sort of evaporative plastic in the mix, and that's how they make the filament.
Mm-hmm.
But you can heat up the tip of the extruder, so where the filament comes out, and you do this all in the software, and it'll change the color of the wood as it comes out. How cool is that? I love living in the future. This is awesome.
All right. I think what's interesting to me is the make your tool make more tools.
So today I totally printed out what's called a radius ruler, which is basically a ruler that instead of having notches on it for your widths or whatever, it's just different radiuses, like a 2.5 millimeter radius from 1 all the way to 12 millimeters every half millimeter. So I can take a part that I am trying to duplicate and hold this little radius ruler up next to and go, oh, well, that's a 3.5 millimeter radius.
So you can tell how tight the curve is on something?
Yeah.
That's actually very difficult to determine without a gauge.
Yes.
Well, that's pretty cool. So there's links in the show notes so you can get your own. First, a link to Amazon to buy your own printer. And there's a link to this duplicator i3. That's the list of all the different things that you can make for the printer. Is that what that was?
Yes. So that's a link to a guy who has one of these duplicator i3s. That's the generic name for it. And he's got a whole bunch of nifty little things to do to it.
Cool. This week's special guest is Jenna Meek, an owner instructor with Carry On Colorado. Jenna just finished her first book, Calling the Shots: Self-Protection and Firearm Choices That Work for You. Jenna Meek is a self-defense instructor holding credentials from the Mossad Ayub Group and the NRA. She specializes in teaching firearms and self-defense. Jenna and her husband, Jeff, run Carry On Colorado. Jenna has also been spotted traveling, teaching, and learning from other instructors. When she's not teaching, she's homeschooling her son and battling the affections of her naughty, yet ever so loving black Labrador Retriever, Vader. Welcome to the show, Jenna.
Thanks for having me back to the show, Sean.
Since we've last spoken, you've written your first book, Calling the Shots: Self-Protection and Firearm Choices That Work for You. Who's this book aimed at?
This book is primarily aimed at anybody, especially women, though, who might be struggling with the decision to take responsibility for their own safety. Or maybe they've made that decision and they're not quite sure how to go about it. So what I do is I talk a lot about what worked and didn't work for me on my self-defense journey in hopes that I can help others have an easier time with guns and self-protection. I've also been told by others who've previewed the book that the topics I cover are not only useful for the beginners, but for the seasoned concealed carrier as well.
What motivated you to write a book?
I had several people tell me that I needed to write a book. One of those was Mark MacYoung. If you don't know who he is, look him up. He's an interesting character, and he's also a mentor of mine. The other person was my husband. Evidently, he got tired of hearing me repeat myself over and over and over again and said, "You have quite a lot to say, and you answer a lot of the same questions a lot. Maybe you should put this stuff on paper." So I did.
I think that Chapter 12, Normal, Abnormal, and Dangerous, the New Situational Awareness, is probably the most interesting chapter to me. Could you give us a thumbnail sketch of your views of situational awareness?
Sure. The term situational awareness makes my skin crawl. It's a very military concept. What I do is teaching civilians. It's hard to adapt the military tactics to the civilian lifestyle. So people like to talk about the Cooper color codes, and well, that's all fine and well. They're very descriptive in nature. I don't find them to be exactly actionable. For instance, you hear people say stuff like head up, head on a swivel, eyes up, head on a swivel all the time. But if you really had to live your life like that, it can be exhausting. I mean, you have to constantly know what's going around you 360 degrees, 24 hours a day. It's impossible. You can't live like that. So what I like to talk about situational awareness is first things that we have to do is know what normal looks like. So for instance, what's normal behavior in a parking lot? What are people doing day to day in a parking lot? The way I like to explain this is getting people to understand the normal. So when they see something that's abnormal, they can pay attention at that point and say, huh, that's not normal, but I don't yet know if it's dangerous. Determining the difference between abnormal and dangerous gives you a whole better understanding of when it's maybe time to fight or get out of there, more importantly. That's pretty much how I like to describe that. It takes a couple of minutes a day tops to stay safe, because the only time you really have to be on the clock is when something is not normal, and that's when you have to pay attention. If you look around and you see everything's normal, great, go back to what you were doing.
I thought that was a very interesting way to look at things. It wasn't pay attention to absolutely everything that was going on. It was determine if this is out of the usual. Is this unusual? Is this abnormal? And if this is abnormal, is this a threat?
Yeah, absolutely. I can think of a couple instances. My husband likes to tell the story about one time I went into the liquor store. I don't know why he can't think of a better scenario, but this is one we talk about a lot. So he's sitting in the truck with my son waiting for me to come out, and they noticed the person came out empty-handed. Okay, not exactly normal, because usually when you go into a store, especially a liquor store, you have something specific you're after, right? But it didn't necessarily make that action of a person coming out empty-handed dangerous. Abnormal, maybe they didn't have what they were looking for, or it was too expensive, or something like that. But the person went to their car, got in, and left. So there was no danger. It was just something that you don't see happen every day in that scenario. And that's kind of what I'm talking about.
So rather than carry a whole list of color codes and try to figure out what to do with them in your head, just pay attention to what's normal in your environment. Determine if something is abnormal in your environment. And then once you've determined that something is abnormal, know whether or not that abnormal thing is now a threat to you, and then decide what to do about that threat.
Yep, that's absolutely right.
All right, Jenna, it was good to talk with you. I'll see you again soon.
Thanks so much for having me. I look forward to talking to you again sometime.
Jenna's book, Calling the Shots, Self-Protection and Firearm Choices That Work for You, is available at Amazon.com. It's $4 for Kindle and $15 in paperback. The link is in the show notes. You can also follow her blog at jennacarryoncolorado.wordpress.com. That's Jenna spelled J-E-N-N-A.
Fun with headlines.
Oh boy. Fugitive wanted for eluding officers in Franklin.
Wait a second. He's wanted for eluding officers. Like, he was doing nothing.
Yes.
And now he's wanted for eluding officers, but he was not doing anything at all. And then he eluded the officers, and now they want him for that.
Yes, yes. And so that's actually why I clicked on that, because before I even read the story, I went, oh, look, this is going to be fun with headlines. Because you don't get in trouble just for getting away from the police. Now, you can get in trouble for evading arrest, but you have to have already committed a crime to evade arrest.
There tends to be a triggering event, I think.
Yes. A 35-year-old man is accused of eluding attempts by officers to take him into custody. Franklin police are searching for suspect, now a wanted fugitive, who is a convicted felon on probation. Police said on January 11th, suspect ran from TJ Maxx loss prevention officers who were attempting to arrest him for shoplifting. So, security guards. Once he got into his car, suspects reportedly sped away, nearly hitting a shopper. Now he's also wanted on felony theft and reckless driving charges.
I don't think that's what he's also wanted on. I think that's what he's really wanted on.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure that running away from security guards is not a crime.
No, I don't really think that's what he's wanted for.
Good job, guys. You always know it's going to be a good story when it's written by web staff.
Nobody wanted their name on that one.
Yeah, I really think they farm a lot of these stories out to, like, overseas people for $5.
I'm pretty sure they don't hand it out to high school students because their teachers would grade them down for this.
Yeah.
Everyone likes to mock Windows as buggy and vulnerable. Go use Linux, they say. It's secure because everyone has seen the source code, they say. Well, Barron says they found one of the most widespread vulnerabilities yet. And guess what? It's in Linux. In...
Tech tips.
You are damaging my calm.
Tech tips with the Baron. Baron, what nuclear item has detonated on the internet this week?
Nuclear is the proper adjective, Sean. Let me say it right now. Anyone listening to this podcast on a Linux machine or has any Linux devices, pause this podcast. At the end of the statement, go and update your devices, specifically glibc.
Come on, Baron. Isn't that just a little bit alarmist?
Well, Sean, there's a bright, shiny buffer overflow that's been discovered in one of the core shared libraries that's been there since 2008. This particular function in question is used by just about every common utility and service out there. This affects just about anything and everything that touches the internet, as the function in question is for performing DNS lookups, secure shell, sudo, curl, wget, are all known to be vulnerable under this exploit. Anything that relies on the shared library is vulnerable.
What does that mean in English?
If you have a Linux box and any of those commands or services are available and use that library call, congrats, I can own your box. But it gets worse.
How does it get any worse than that?
Well, if a developer was frisky and statically linked the library, that application must be independently updated as well, instead of just the shared library. Earth to idiot dev who does that, it's the reason we use shared libraries. But the worst of all of this is embedded devices. Most devices will use a different implementation called microlibc. However, it's different. It's actually not affected near as we can tell. There are a decent number of devices, though, that will use the full implementation of glibc. And with more devices doing this, more will become vulnerable. Now, the million-dollar question is, are the companies still doing software updates for hardware that may still be in service? Remember, this bug goes all the way back to 2008. Heck, there's some question of whether or not this bug does or does not affect Android, which is scary given how hard it is to get updates rolled out to non-Nexus phones unless you root your device and jump through the hoops. This is not the realm of your average user, and the exploit is serious.
Well, what exactly could they do?
Any device they compromise, they own in its entirety. Remember 3 years ago when there were thousands of web servers used in a distributed denial of service attack?
Yeah, didn't you find out later that Linode's DreamHost server was probably one of those zombies?
Yep. Now imagine tagging hundreds of thousands of home users. Even worse, they could watch their system for activity or network traffic depending on where the exploit was located, so say it was their home router, and snatch critical data, including passwords, banking information, and so on and so forth, anything that goes across in the clear.
Damn. Other than updating, is there anything else we could do?
Use secure HTTP whenever possible. Keep your systems up to date. Patches will continue to roll out for different distributions as well as other bugs in the future. And as always, trust nothing.
Well, that's solid advice I think we can all handle. But it still sounds like we're pretty much along for the ride.
Sadly, pretty much, Sean, we are. Until vendors make it easy for the aftermarket to patch their no longer supported crap, there's going to be a lot of this going for a ride.
All right, Baron. Thanks for the tips. See you again next week.
See you next week, Sean.
Baron still blogs at the-minuteman.org.
The J-Block. Scalia and the Second Amendment are dead. It's probably, at this point, not a surprise to anybody who's listening to any firearms podcast that Justice Scalia died last week. And with Justice Scalia, the Second Amendment died too. Because Justice Scalia was the person who wrote the Heller decision and was vote number 5. So as soon as the Republican Party folds and spindles and mutilates themselves like they always do, spaghetti spines the lot of them, and as soon as they go ahead and give him the third anti-gun Supreme Court nominee, it goes 5-4 the other way.
Then they'll start taking gun cases again, suddenly.
And the very first one that comes up, they will say, oh, we've changed our mind. It's a collective right. You don't have a right to have a gun. You can write whatever law you want, rational basis, and that'll be the end of it.
So Heller was a 5-4 decision on you being able to have a revolver in your home. That was it.
For immediate self-defense. That's all Heller said. Yes, that was it. A revolver in your home for immediate self-defense. It actually said two things. One, that you could have a revolver, a handgun. But a revolver was the gun that he had. Number two, that they couldn't require you to disassemble your shotgun or your rifle or lock it in a safe if you were going to use it for immediate self-defense. That was all Heller said. So, reacting very, very quickly, Senator Mitch McConnell said he and the Senate would exercise their advice and consent role under the Constitution and would block any further Obama appointments to the Supreme Court to replace Scalia. And you know what? If you believe that,
I got a bridge to sell you.
Seriously, dry that one out and you can fertilize the lawn with it. They are going to bend over and smooch Obama's butt.
Well, the New York Times might say something bad about us.
I know.
And it's an election year and we have to hold the Senate.
What good is holding the Senate if you don't actually do anything with it?
Right.
But what's really funny is Chuck U. Schumer got all butthurt about it. On ABC's This Week, he tells George Stephanopoulos this.
We Democrats didn't do this when we voted 97-0 for Justice Kennedy in the last year of Reagan's term.
After voting down Justice Bork.
Yeah, great. There's a small problem with this. Back in 2007, after getting angry that George W. Bush had managed to sneak Sam Alito and John Roberts onto the Supreme Court, Chuck U. Schumer laid down the law on future George W. Bush appointments.
That we should not confirm any Bush nominee to the Supreme Court except in extraordinary circumstances.
Now, what those extraordinary circumstances happened to be were left unexplained. I'm guessing there was something like Bush appoints another justice like Anthony Kennedy, a guy that very quickly grows in office and votes with the liberal wing of the court all the time. So, Obama's had two bites at the apple. He's appointed Kagan and Sotomayor. Both are liberal ideologues who have immediately shown their hostility towards gun rights. They are exactly the sort of people that anti-gun Chuck U. Schumer wants on the court. It's ironic how 2007 Chuck U. Schumer explains to 2016 Chuck U. Schumer exactly why Mitch McConnell would want to block a third Obama appointee.
Considering the constitutional harm and dramatic departures that are in store if those few are joined by one more ideological ally, we have to, in my judgment, stick by the precepts that I've elaborated. I will do everything in my power to prevent one more ideological ally from joining Roberts and Alito on the court.
Change the names, and it all fits. But don't worry, Chuck. This is the Republicans we're talking about. Between them, they don't have enough vertebrae to make up a spine. There's probably a gang of however many there are needed to thwart this whole thing being assembled to vote for whichever anti-gun, anti-liberty ideologue affirmative action baby Obama plans on nominating. So I don't imagine that this is anything other than political posturing. And now a word from our sponsor. You know what will happen. If you ever have to defend yourself, you're going to end up in handcuffs. Are you trained to win the fight after the fight? Sure, you can draw, aim, and put two in the ten ring. But have you learned your legal self-defense? Do you know the law? Go to lawofselfdefense.com/variety to sign up for your legal self-defense class. Each class is tailored to the laws in your state. Attorney Andrew Branca will teach you the law. Not just what the law says, but what the judge's legal opinions say. What the jury instructions say. Sure, you could risk spending the rest of your life in prison because you followed the advice of some gun store counter jockey. Or you could spend the day with the man who literally wrote the book on the law of self-defense. Carry a gun so you're hard to kill. Know the law so you're hard to convict. Go to lawofselfdefense.com/variety to sign up for a legal self-defense class in your state. And make sure to use discount code VARIETY at checkout to receive 10% off.
This podcast runs on your donations. Go to gunblogvarietycast.com and click on the donate or subscribe button in the right sidebar. You can make a one-time donation of any amount or subscribe for as little as $2 a month. That doesn't sound like much, but we pay our server costs monthly. A little help from you is a big help to us.
This week, laughing at liberals videos an anti-gun town hall meeting in Oregon. You know what that means. It's time for another patented weird audio fisk in This week in anti-gun nuttery. So hey, Weird, what have you got for us this week?
So you might have heard it, Laughing at Liberals, before. It's a pro-gun YouTube channel that does the guerrilla journalism equivalent to what I do here. He finds protests, hearings, and meetings of anti-gunners in Oregon and Washington and records them so you can see the sheer lunacy of the anti-gunners. If you aren't following his channel, I recommend it. And if it sounds familiar, but you don't know where, he's the guy who was contributing to an allegedly unbiased film on the Oregon gun debate. But when he saw a trailer on a crowdfunding site and realized it was an anti-gun hack job, he confronted the director of the project. The director responded by assaulting and breaking his left arm. Classy, those anti-gunners. So I grabbed a few clips for today. The first two are from some sort of anti-gun town hall. There are anti-gun elected officials there, as well as lobbyists from anti-gun groups. First, a question from the audience.
I think that we would be in much better situation if we were able to limit our guns, that is the guns that we can just own freely, to what the guns were in, 1779 or something, when the Constitution was written, I may be off in a year or two. The Founding Fathers certainly didn't anticipate these multi-automatic kinds of guns. Why hasn't anybody, or could somebody, I'm not a lawyer, could somebody bring a case saying, this is what the Constitution says. We will interpret it in terms of the times in which it was written, and any other guns become a privilege since they're dangerous like cars and would require licensing, etc.
So first up, wow, what a completely insane statement. As the old saying goes, better to hold your tongue and be thought a fool than speak and remove all doubt. When I saw the clip, I saw this blathering old woman. I just assumed she was some nut that wandered in off the street. But she's not. Her name is Muriel Lezak, and she's a professor emeritus from Oregon Health and Science University School of Medicine. Shows that just because you're wicked smart in one field, you can quickly become an idiot when you step outside of it. Still, given that she's a well-educated researcher, isn't it surprising she didn't even bother to look up when the Constitution was ratified? 1788. Or the U.S. Bill of Rights, 1789. And why doesn't any anti-gunner see the irony of saying the Founding Fathers couldn't anticipate modern technology or even want people in this country to use modern technology when it came to firearms, all while typing on a blog or, in this case, speaking into a microphone while exercising their First Amendment rights? And multi-automatic?
Multi-automatic.
She's not stupid. She's just ignorant. And she's a retired researcher. Given how basic her mistakes are, it's intentional ignorance. Anti-gunners don't care. They just want to ban guns because they have the feels. Rationality has no part in their desires. As for the court case she's speculating on, it's already happened. It's called Heller versus DC and McDonald versus City of Chicago. And her side lost. Let's remind everyone what Heller said about this very argument. Some have made the argument, bordering on the frivolous, that only those arms in existence in the 18th century are protected by the Second Amendment. We do not interpret constitutional rights that way. Just as the First Amendment protects modern forms of communication, the Second Amendment extends prima facie to all the instruments that constitute bearable arms, even those that were not in existence at the time of the founding. Which is kind of funny, since the founders never anticipated an ignorant neuropsychologist trying to exercise her First Amendment rights using an electronically powered, amplified public address system, and having the video and audio of her playable on demand anywhere in the world via the internet. But I doubt they'd have a problem with it. Next, we have State Representative Lou Frederick.
You are trying to be too logical here.
Too logical? And laughter from the room? This quick clip has just shown that this complacent ignorance is not only Representative Frederick, but the entire room. People should have been appalled and amazed at this poor old lost woman, not thinking that she said something brilliant. This is why the antis believe that they are in the majority, and hold surveys that show 90% of gun owners agree with them. They surround themselves with people who know nothing on the subject of guns, gun laws, or public safety, and then lobby to change the laws to suit their ignorance.
These are the issues that people would like to deal with, but it's been hijacked by an effort to get as many guns as possible into the community, where you have people believing that that is the only way that they can be safe.
No, it's been hijacked by people who know what they're talking about. And really, hijack is a word I take issue with, as the right to keep and bear arms should have never been in the hands of these buffoons, any more than my auto mechanic should be prescribing me medication. Also, I really can't do a show without saying, record low violent crime, record high gun ownership. We feel that way because we're right. Next, Robert Yulee from Gun Owners for Responsible Ownership, an anti-gun false flag group.
I'd like to say something. I don't think that we're ever going to be able to change the Constitution as it's written. I think it's a no-win battle. What we really need to do is to make the guns that are out there safer and make certain that people that own the guns are held accountable and liable for those guns. Just like we're held, we have liability insurance for our cars, we have liability insurance for our property if people get hurt on our property. We need to hold gun owners accountable and liable for their weapons.
Of course they won't change the Constitution. If there was ever a chance to repeal the Second Amendment, they would have done it in the 60s, when most gun owners were hunters, and things like concealed carry were mostly criminal practices throughout the country. As far as accountability and liability for mishandling of firearms, bad faith argument. You murder somebody, you're liable for it. If you leave your gun lying around and someone gets hurt, you're getting sued. No, what he's talking about is this bogus gun owner's insurance, where lawful gun owners pay insurance to offset the cost of gun violence. Again, the bulk of gun death is suicide. The person pulling the trigger is paying for their act right there. After that, the bulk of gun death is street crime. Gang members can't legally own guns in the first place, so what makes you think that they'd take out an insurance policy to pay for Ray Ray's life in a wheelchair after a gang hit severed his spine? Nope, what he's proposing is a dishonest tax on lawful gun owners. Nope, never. I'm going to close with this exchange between Police Chief Ed Holmes of Mercer Island, Washington, and State Representative Jay Rodney at a public hearing on a law that would mandate that all guns seized by police be destroyed, rather than giving the police the choice to sell off the property to defer costs.
People look to their law enforcement agencies to keep them safe. When we take guns off the street from people who should not have them, that is a step in the right direction. That helps to keep our communities safe. But if we then turn right around and sell those very same guns, that does not keep our communities safe. And I'm thinking specifically of when those guns get in the wrong hands. They were in the wrong hands once, they could be in the wrong hands again.
So there's a lot in there, but let's hear the exchange first.
So, Chief, I understand that, you know, I would assume that every firearm that you sell is subject to a background investigation, background check, correct? I mean, you don't sell those firearms to citizens who are without a background check.
Right. And when I say government selling them, I mean, I don't physically sell them, or police departments don't. So we sell them to dealers who then turn around. And yes, there are checks that the dealers would run, but you know, there's that risk. Like I say, they were in the wrong hands once. They could certainly be in the wrong hands again. And why are we in the business of being on that transaction history?
Wow. Okay, so first up, let's acknowledge that there are people so irrational to think that a gun or a car or a knife or some other inanimate object can be imbued with evil energy from a crime. But that's not what Chief Holmes is talking about here. The chief says, it was in the wrong hands once, it could be in the wrong hands again. He admits that FFLs who sell the guns for him are required to conduct background checks, but he says, there's that risk. What he's telling us is that he doesn't believe background checks work. He fears citizens with guns. He subscribes to that false idea that every gun owner is a law-abiding citizen until he isn't. He doesn't believe in civilian ownership of firearms. He's gotten his grubby paws on the guns, and he's desperate to melt them down before any citizens get them again. He doesn't believe in your right to own a gun if you're an honest, decent citizen. He believes in making sure that there are as few guns as possible. And if that means melting down some guns to make that happen, Chief Ed Holmes of Mercer Island is perfectly happy to do it. This is an assault on all gun owners, and has nothing to do with public safety.
All right, Weird. It was good to talk with you. I'll see you again next week.
See you next week, Sean.
In addition to appearing here, Weird is a regular host on The Squirrel Report and blogs at weirdworld.com. That's weerdworld.com.
Stuff that grinds my gears. People who believe that if you think the government shouldn't do something, you think that it shouldn't be done at all.
Well, yeah, of course. Like, you know, roads and stuff. That's what you're talking about, right?
Yeah, because, you know, I think maybe the government really shouldn't be involved in indoctrinating children in their particular, I don't know what they call it, school, but, you know, they're indoctrinating children in a particular way. And I think, you know, maybe it would be better if parents just got to take their kids to whatever private school they wanted to take their kids to. Oh, you don't want kids to get an education. Well, I don't personally care if they get an education, but I'm not opposed to it. I just don't think the government agents should be the ones involved doing it. Call me crazy, but I just don't think that should happen. And welfare. I am perfectly happy with charity. I'm perfectly happy with people getting together and taking care of each other. But maybe the government shouldn't necessarily be involved in that. And holding a gun to my head and taking my money away and then calling themselves charitable for doing it.
I had this exact argument this week where a guy could not accept that there was a difference between someone taking your money at gunpoint to give someone else, and Jesus telling you, hey, the poor will always be with you, so you should, like, take care of them. He couldn't understand that there was a difference there.
So you punched him in the mouth and took his wallet?
No.
Well, why not? He didn't see the difference.
Yeah. So funny thing about that, right? If I had done that, he certainly would have seen the difference, and then I would have, you know, gotten fired.
Not if you hit him hard enough. He'd have knocked him out.
Right, they don't want to go into jail.
You could have said, I didn't do it. It was Jesus. Healthcare. Me and my doctor can get along just fine without the government getting involved. Oh, you want people to die with no healthcare? No, I just don't want to have a discussion with the healthcare exchange. And really, honestly, what terrifies me, I don't want my doctor to be an employee of the government. Because that's what happens in England. When the doctor is an employee of the government, he works for the government, not for you.
That is true.
And who does he have to please?
Not you.
Exactly. What's cheaper, treating you or letting you die?
Yeah.
So what about you, Adam?
Well, I'm pretty sure I've talked about this before, but I'm looking for another car for my wife this time. Inaccurate Craigslist postings. Just because you leave something out of your Craigslist posting doesn't mean it's not going to be the first thing that I notice when I get in the car. For example, I test drove a car this last weekend. Things not mentioned in the Craigslist ad. The airbag doesn't work. The check engine light is on. Now, here in my county, and in I think most urban areas, you have to get emissions checks before you can title or tag a vehicle. And in a post-1996 vehicle here, that means if the check engine light is on, you are not getting a title. So you can't sell a car that has a check engine light on because you can't transfer title. The tires, I didn't actually notice this until after I had driven at 75 miles an hour in the rain on the interstate. The tires had the steel belt showing on the inside. So that's not good.
So wait, not only were they showing, but they were only showing on part of the tire. So the tires were bad and the alignment was off.
Yes. And there was some shimmy when I was driving it. And I was like, it feels like maybe your tires are a little off balance there. And he goes, oh, yeah, I haven't started it in 4 months. Like, oh, okay. So that's good. But the kicker was that there were 20,000 more miles on the car than what was in the Craigslist post.
So he had 20,000 more miles on it, and he hadn't started it in 4 months?
Mm-hmm.
So the gremlins were out there, like, changing the numbers?
Sure. So, had a nice, lovely conversation with the guy. And then at the end, I was like, I would have bought it if it was in the condition that you told me it was in. Clearly, it's not in that condition.
You know, I've got a really nice 2016 hybrid Camry. You should totally get your wife one of those.
Yeah, I should totally like get a job where they'll buy my wife one of those.
You know, they sell them to private individuals. You don't have to get them as company cars.
I'm not paying for that.
I'm just saying. It gets good gas mileage.
Yeah. So if I buy my wife a $3,000 car and she drives it for 5 years, the most that can happen is that we lose $3,000 on the $3,000 car. If I buy her a $30,000 car and she drives it for 5 years, we're going to lose like $25,000 on that car.
It was $26,000, not 30.
Whatever. So I'll lose 21 instead of 3.
Buy once, cry once.
No, you cry every month. Every month. And now it's like a 10-year payment or some stupid stuff. Just stop doing that.
Yeah, I totally understand. I would really like to have something other than the pickup truck for my wife so that she can stop complaining about riding in the street legal go-kart. Fun fact, Ford Rangers were marketed at 18 to 26-year-old young men.
Yes. I almost bought one when I was 18 to 26 years old.
Right. Well, see, so they're sprung and the seats are set to ride like trucks.
Rawr.
Manly trucks. So they're rough, mm-hmm, like trucks because manly. Because you know what? If you've got enough money to drive an F-150.
You'd have bought an F-150.
Right. And you don't have to have it tell you I'm a manly truck. Because it's a manly truck already.
That's funny.
So I've got a 2004 Ford Ranger with the towing package. So figure how that works out.
So you can tow your 5-foot U-Haul.
I had a 5x8 box trailer that I just sold about November.
Right.
And I had all my historical reenactment stuff that used to ride around in it. So yeah, it was useful. But now I don't tow anything. And I have a 12-year-old truck. That is the vehicle my wife drives. Because about 7 years ago, somebody decided that they would take their land yacht, make a left-hand turn, and wipe out the little tiny car that my wife used to drive.
All right.
Well, that's our show for the week.
Thanks again to Rob Allen for our music.
And Firearms Policy Coalition for their support.
And thank you for listening to the Gunblog Variety Cast.
Constructive criticism can be sent to Sean at SeanSorrentino.com.
And hate mail to WizardPC at GunsCarsTech.com.
Like and share us on Facebook.
If you have Facebook.
And if you receive this podcast through iTunes, make sure to leave us a glowing 5-star review.
Show notes can be found at GunblogVarietyCast.com/episode79.
This is a URS production.